There's no place to escape to.
This is the last
podcast on the left.
From your glade.
That's when the cannibalism started.
What was that?
So I landed in JFK last night. And I got picked up by a taxi cab. It was really windy coming into New York last night.
Oh, yeah.
Really, very scary, very cold. And I got in a taxi, and the guy is driving, Asian man. Means nothing.
We don't have to clarify that. Yeah, there's no, you just threw that out there, okay.
So we're coming on the highway, and he's like, do you mind if I turn on radio? I was just like, yeah, buddy, do what you gotta do. Turns it on, Dust in the Wind comes on.
Oh, I like that.
Starts going, and so he starts full throat. This is 12:30 at night. Oh, yeah, it's Dust in the Wind. As he's screaming Dust in the Wind, yeah. He is putting the taxi up to 95, no fucking joke, 95 miles per hour. We are weaving in and out of traffic while he's going, oh, yeah, it's Dust in the Wind.
Oh, and he's not wrong either.
Very confident.
Welcome to the show, everyone. I am Ben Kissel. That's Marcus Parks. Thankfully, he got here safely after a taxi ride from heaven, in my opinion. That sounds like a great time.
He took a 40-minute drive. It is a 40-minute, normally, no traffic drive from JFK to Brooklyn.
Yeah.
16 minutes.
Oh, I love that guy.
And that's just using the power of his mind, confidence. And there's a lot of people that get a lot done just with the power of their minds. And one of those guys in particular, well, Mr. LRH, which is the only way I'm calling him LRH.
Call him no, 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 no. If you call him LRH, then they're starting to worm their way into your fucking brain, man.
Lafayette Hubbard is the name. And say your name is Henry Zebrowski.
My name is Henry Zebrowski.
Yes. Okay.
Laffy himself could have trained that Asian man to be the first Asian president, which we're not going to see till 2048.
Well, who knows when it can happen. All right, so we're on to, L. Ron Hubbard Part 2. This is, we're getting more intense. He's getting crazier and crazier.
Yes, he is. Now, following his bigamist wedding to Sarah Northrup.
Big of him, big of me.
Do not. Are you seriously going to start with that?
I already did.
Hubbard moved with his new bride to California and continued his scheme of bilking money from the Navy by faking various injuries and ailments.
And you don't need a college degree to get that job.
No, you can just fake anything.
But the debasement he had put himself through in order to carry out this scam, plus the shame of a less-than-stellar naval career, combined with the disintegration of his first marriage, had put him in a bit of a low place.
When you say less-than-stellar naval career, you are talking about him wasting a huge amount of ammunition on a...
magnetic deposit, yes.
Yes, 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 yes. He is
less-than-stellar.
And also almost starting a war with Mexico, yes.
Less-than-stellar.
They don't care.
I don't know if that's true.
And since he was in a low place, the affirmations were born.
Now, this is the core of the magical power of L. Ron Hubbard. Now, this is true. Now, remember, as a chaos magician, if you're a practicing chaos magician, anything you do has replications of the universe, right?
Ramifications?
Shut up.
Repercussions.
Repercussions. I don't know what repercussions
is. LRH made up a 15-letter word for God in Dianetics, which I read 180 pages of on the plane yesterday, so I think I know a little bit about something about words.
What is the 10-letter word for God?
Literally, it is that. I will say, it's like EFGH445. It's like, literally, I will write it out and I'll put it, it makes no sense. It's okay. Just a part of how Laffy plays with reality.
Okay.
So he has been lying about these diseases. Now, a lot of times when they talk about, it's like, if they always talk about the same thing. It's like, if you're going to make a lie about something, never make it about somebody you love. Never say, like, somebody got hurt or that's why I can't do XYZ.
Sure.
Because you're putting bad karma out there.
Right.
So he has been building up this fake persona of himself as an injured person. So he knew that on the inside, he had to write himself. And a part of that was using essentially magical queries, or what you'd say are like when you state your intention in a ritual. He did these in his own journals.
Yeah. Hmm. Now, the affirmations were essentially the other half of what would become Dianetics, along with Excalibur, which was the secret manuscript that was so amazing,
yes,
it made people either lose their minds or kill themselves.
Like the new Duke Nukem game that never came out.
No, it came out and it was terrible.
Ah, well, that's not good.
The affirmations, though, were nowhere near as dramatic and were much more private than Excalibur. They were essentially proclamations about himself so he could feel better about the low state of life he'd found himself in. For example, he would write simple, generalized statements like, I can write, my mind is still brilliant, and I am not bad to look upon.
Oh, what a jerk off.
No, he's positive.
No, I really, no, he's not positive. He's a self-centered, meanwhile, self-loathing maniac.
It's an exercise that works. If you keep a journal and write good shit about yourself in it, you'll start to believe it.
Fake it till you make it.
That's just what people in solitary confinement do. So that you don't hang themselves with a bedsheet.
Exactly. But then you write a fun little book out of your own dookie.
But besides those generalized statements, there were also a lot of very personal statements. For example,
I am fortunate for losing Polly and my parents, for they never meant well by me. Fortunate. Wow.
They might be the lucky ones.
Now, that last affirmation actually held quite a bit of weight at this time for Ronald, as his family had all but disowned him for abandoning his wife, Polly, and their two children. Even his aunts, who had once loved him so much, said,
he's but a stranger to us now. Oh, God. I hate what he's done. He's a pig. He's disgusting.
Oh, my goodness. Well, that's not right. Yeah, he just abandoned his entire family. Yeah. They have every right to hate him.
Yeah, for greener pastures, buddy. See you later.
Greener pastures, well. Yeah.
Well, what he had done is after he had married Sarah Northrup, he went back to Montana and tried to live there for a little bit while his ex-wife and his children were living with his grandparents.
Also something in a magician / psychopath would do. You show up and just be like, this is reality now. We're all going to pretend like this is fine. But his family are like, well, maybe that's your reality, but our reality is that we have been raising your children for you out here. Yeah, you need to show them back up. And where's your fucking cash?
Yeah.
It seems like you're making all this money. You show up with all these fancy clothes, which is he just been spending robbing Peter to pay Paul this entire time.
Yeah, his wife eventually divorced him on grounds of desertion. And when he went back with Sarah to Montana, he would not see them again until his mother's death. And even then, he didn't even stay around for the funeral.
His wife divorced him for the same reason that Bo Bergdahl's in prison? I mean, it's like desertion is that's the saddest thing I've ever heard a wife have to divorce her deadbeat husband for.
You get 10 years for take this job and shoving it.
Let's bring some Schaefer into this. Why not?
So the affirmations were set out in choruses. Chorus one included the aforementioned statements, as well as more bizarre things like,
my magical work is powerful and effective. The numbers 7, 25, and 16 are not unlucky or evil for me. Masturbation was no sin or crime. I do not need to have ulcers anymore.
Get the guy out of Scientology, get him off of your walls and things like that. Just put him in the corner playing scratch-offs in the bar. That's who he is.
But also,
that's all that this is.
But think about this. That means these are things that he are starting to believe.
Yeah.
I think that he was very, obviously he's very sick. But he obviously was having trepidations about the numbers 7, 25, and 16. And he's jerking off quite a bit.
A lot.
And I'm guilty of it.
Well, we're all guilty of that. That's fine.
Yeah, there are these little small delusions that he has.
I don't need to have ulcers anymore. I don't need it. You're just going to kick them to the curb.
That's right.
The ulcers line brings us right into course two, which dealt with his imaginary health problems as well as his, let's say, unhealthy attitudes towards sex. Concerning his health, he had believed in his non-existent injuries so heavily that he was essentially having to deprogram himself from them. After faking a foot injury, he wrote,
the injury is no longer needed. All is well. You have perfect and lovely feet.
So he pulled kind of a Kevin Spacey from Usual Suspects or something.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, something like that.
Also, he doesn't have, I can guarantee you, I've never seen a picture of him without shoes on.
Yeah.
But he does not have lovely feet.
No, I can guarantee you he doesn't.
Another affirmation said,
your stomach trouble you use as an excuse to keep the Navy from punishing you. You are free of the Navy.
I think you can fake good stomach trouble, though.
You think so?
Yeah, I mean, I get super nervous and I'm just like, oh, and I get all knotted up.
All you have to do is, you think I'm sick.
I believe it.
That's always a good trick, too. If you're ever on a bus and you want to sit alone on a bus, especially a Greyhound bus, always pretend like you're super, super sick.
Yeah.
Like sit there going, oh, God.
Yeah.
This devil's in my balls.
Yeah, well, it's very difficult to be the picture of perfect health when on a bus.
Yeah. Now, this is what he wrote about sex.
You have no fear of what any woman may think of your bed conduct. Yeah. You know you're a master. You know they'll be thrilled. You can come many times without weariness. Many women are not capable of pleasure in sex, and anything adverse they say or do has no effect whatever upon your pleasure.
I do gotta say, just given the physical look of L. Ron Hubbard, that makes that statement disgusting. But think about it, if Sting said that, that is, that's just tantric sex.
Well, yeah, if...
absolutely not.
Tantric multiple orgasm... Oh, no, tantric sex, you hold it for one big
one. Yeah, you hold it for one big one.
But it's about a shared tantric experience. It's snakes having, orgasms together.
Yeah, this is the opposite of tantric sex.
Okay, it's the opposite of tantric sex. Either way, it's more disturbing because he's just such a dumpy little toad person.
It's like more like it's bad if it came from L. Ron Hubbard. It would only be worse if it came from like Hulk Hogan.
Oh, well, the Hulkster can do anything to me.
He also wrote,
"You have no fear if they conceive. What if they do? You do not care. Pour it into them and let fate decide."
Well, it doesn't matter how good you look in that one. That's just disgusting. Pour it into him.
I don't need a Jimmy hat. I don't need no net for my sperm like the flying Walindas down there.
He was also utterly and completely obsessed with masturbation, which seems to be an almost universal preoccupation amongst cult leaders. I don't know why, but these guys are all obsessed with jerking off.
You got to get out. You gotta get it out.
Gotta get it out.
I guess so.
Yes, but some guys, they get it out too much. Dave Berg got it out way too much. Shoko Asahara didn't get it out enough.
Well, that requires sort of a lack of self-control, doesn't it? I mean, one of the first things you learn is, you know, not to touch yourself in public or do those things when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But, like, these guys just don't even, they just don't care.
It'd just be different if you masturbated all the time and you didn't feel super guilty about it. But he obviously did. I feel like if you don't feel guilty about masturbating all the time,
you should feel guilty about masturbating.
But I'm saying that's the problem, is the guilt. It's not the masturbating.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're doing it on a bus.
Well, yeah.
Next to somebody with a stomachache, because that's your thing.
That's a crime.
Yeah. Well, this is what he wrote about that.
Masturbation does not injure or make you insane. Your parents were in error. Everyone masturbates. Look around you.
Yeah, you're right, man. Everyone's jerking off.
Yeah, now you start. You do it.
Where the hell am
now I? Now I'll do it, too.
Oh, God.
And in the personal goal section of the affirmations, he would mention it again by just saying simply,
"You do not masturbate."
And this was in the same section that he wrote,
"Snakes are not dangerous to you. There are no snakes in the bottom of your bed." I don't care what Grover says. I know that there's a monster at the end of this book, and I do not want to complete the book, and you don't have to complete the book.
He's very Freudian with his love of snakes.
Oh, he's all indeed about Freud. Now, the affirmations also show rare moments of self-awareness that I think are very important to understanding L. Ron Hubbard. About his exaggeration of his past and present life, he wrote,
"You can tell all the romantic tales you wish, but you know which ones are lies. You have enough real experience to make anecdotes forever. Stick to your true adventures. It is not necessary for you to lie to be amusing and witty."
Now, what this tells us is that Hubbard's lying was compulsive, and he was well aware of it. Unfortunately, instead of trying to fix it, he doubled down, because no matter how much of a charlatan he was, Hubbard was, you gotta admit, a brilliant man.
Yes,
of course.
Lean in. Always lean in.
Yeah. What he did was he turned that weakness of compulsive lying into a strength. He rode the wave of his ever-growing sea of bullshit, manipulating people into believing him until either he was done with them or they were done with him, after which he would do his best to utterly destroy them.
Well, and I watched this documentary last night, My Scientology Movie by Louis Theroux.
Ooh.
He's a Frenchman, and it was very interesting. They focused a lot on that, people who excommunicated from the church.
Mm-hmm.
Holy hell, they really get the treatment rough. The SPs.
They should.
Well, I don't know.
Well, it's very necessary to him keeping the lie going, because when you have a defector, they're, of course, trying to get other people inside out.
Yeah.
So you have to destroy these people in order to keep your power.
Also, the more people who believe in your lie gives the lie more power, the more true the lie becomes.
And if you watch that Tom Cruise speech on Scientology, he laughs through that entire part discussing SPs. He's literally just talking about destroying lives.
Yeah.
Yes. It's really unbelievable.
Because they think that SPs are literally lower people. But later on we get into Scientology, I'm talking about SPs and psychs specifically.
Well, SPs are suppressive personalities.
We're going to do a lot of this.
Nicole Kidman's father was declared an SP, which is one of the reasons why her and Tom Cruise's marriage fell apart.
Oh no.
I thought they were going to make it Far and Away with such a good movie, because it was Far and Away, which is really just the same fucking thing.
Put them next to each other.
Yeah, Days of Thunder.
That was a good one, and it always made me want to drink Mountain Dew.
Mellow Yellow.
I always hated that Mellow Yellow truck. I was like, it's a Mountain Dew country, motherfucker.
Now, you can also tell in reading the affirmations that Hubbard was starting to ramp up to something huge. He just hadn't figured out just what it was yet. He wrote,
"Your psychology is advanced and true and wonderful. It hypnotizes people. It predicts their emotions, for you are their ruler."
And this was years before Dianetics, which is the book that truly launched his career and would be the foundation that all of Scientology would be built upon. He just needed to perfect one more trick to pull it off. Hypnotism.
Now, this is where it gets kooky.
This is where it gets kooky.
And you know this hypnotism thing? That sounds goofy, that sounds kooky. It fucking worked. This is a skill that he would take throughout his life and use on people again and again and again.
And this is where we're going to get back into the world of Jack Parsons here. Jack Parsons taught L. Ron Hubbard a lot about what it takes to get people under your wing.
Yeah.
And then this affirmations, because a part of the third course of the affirmations talks about him contacting his guardian angel spirit. And so, and that he's in direct contact with a red-haired woman that's beautiful, that it tells him all the truths that he needs to know, and only he can see her. And you could see those occult teachings now directly fueled what Dianetics was. But what he realized he had to do was figure out how to trick the meat of the human brain, which takes something like hypnotism.
It totally disproves religion, too, by the way. His guardian angel would be like a fat slob who was eating a Chick-fil-A in the corner, just like covered in grease, instead of a beautiful woman.
And I'll say to you, Laffy, congrats on not touching yourself this afternoon.
Thank you.
You're going ahead and you're doing it anyway. Yeah. You know what? Congrats for being y'all, being true to yourself. Yes, queen. Yes.
So yeah, L. Ron Hubbard had been taught hypnotism by Jack Parsons, but he needed to find a group that was willing to participate so he could truly perfect this skill. So luckily, the nerds at the Los Angeles Science Fantasy Society were all too willing to oblige.
These fucking guys. I just remember the group of kids I played Magic with, right? Uh-huh. It's just like, and I see that it's the same crew. It's like we had one Jehovah's Witness kid.
Is it similar to the group of adults that you play Magic with?
No, because
you also
they are
do that now.
Technically, those guys, it's D&D, and technically they are all professional comedians.
Okay.
But it's just always like you could see the same crew. It was like a fat little Jehovah's Witness, my friend Jeff, who's like a gangly Jewish dude with buck teeth and braces, and a guy named Corey who had that weird patch of silver hair, and no one would talk to him, and then a silent Indian boy.
Yes. Well, with any luck, they'll nickname us the Unfuckables.
Now, not surprisingly, Hubbard was a fantastic hypnotist and could put some people into a trance by counting to three and snapping his fingers.
1, 2, 3. My God.
Huh? I'm in the further, man. This is creepy.
Now, the weakest minds he could hypnotize almost instantly. And one of those weak minds was a guy named Bill Cox. After one...
It just is what it is.
We call you Willie Cox from now on. You love the nickname.
After one hypnotism session, Hubbard privately took Bill aside and told him that at 2 o'clock the next day, Bill would drop whatever he was doing and meet Hubbard on the corner of Wilshire and Lucas. When Bill arrived, he found that he could not physically take his hands out of his pockets Hubbard let him.
What's happening? Oh, man, my change has got my fingers hostage.
He just wanted a friend so bad.
Yeah. Now, after that, when Hubbard finally allowed him to remove his hands, Hubbard commanded him to grab a metal rail, which Hubbard made Bill believe was getting progressively hotter and hotter. Now, psychosomatic or not, the pain caused Bill to scream in fear until Hubbard laughed, patted him on the shoulder, and sent him home.
What a
day. Get out of here, Willie Cox. That won't be the only hot pole you touch in your life. Get out of here. I'm having fun with it.
Good to see. What did you mean by that last statement?
1, 2, 3. You're a peanut.
Oh. Salty.
Salty. It's very... this is my question. So he did this to various members of this sci-fi group. He would hypnotize them, and they pull all these pranks, and they're all laughing and liking about it. So I have never been hypnotized. I don't know what it's like. I actually don't know if I can be hypnotized because I'm so loud inside of my own brain.
Oh, yeah. It can happen.
They will not get me.
Well, I mean, the closest thing I ever had to being hypnotized, we would go for these evangelical retreats, and the pastors do spellbind you.
Yeah, in a hypnotic kind of movement.
Yeah,
kind of
I mean, speaking in tongues is an extremely hypnotic experience.
No, that's Charles Manson's scat, Marcus.
I'm having fun. That's just fun to me.
But, and then I did get the pushover when they touch you on your head and you fall backwards. That did happen.
Yeah.
And you do kind of, I would argue it's more going with the flow than being hypnotized. But yes, so I do understand the power a little bit.
But I wonder if that L. Ron just has so much power in this group of nerds, and I love that one of the best parts about groups of friends of nerdy guys like this is that they're very supportive.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if they're all in on this game, because they used to do this all the time. They would talk about when L. Ron would show up and he would tell them these fantastic stories. There would be like one guy who's like, so how old are you? Are you 184 years old? And L. Ron, there was like one time one of the sci-fi authors got kicked out of the group, and L. Ron turned to me and like, well, what are you ever talking about? He's just like, well, it says you said you spent 8 years in the Navy, and then you said you explored China, and then you went to Africa, and then you traveled all of these uninhabited islands. That's like that if you add up all those years, that's like 84 years. And so they get kicked him out, but everyone else just liked the game of it.
Well, they liked the game at first, because at first the hypnotism stuff was like really fun. Like one guy, he made him believe that he was holding two tiny kangaroos in his hand.
That's cute.
That's fun.
And then another time he made a guy think that he was having a phone argument with a really pushy used car salesman.
See, that's stressful.
Yeah, that's stressful. They're like, oh, okay, that's still kind of fun though. But this hot rail incident, they only found out.
Hot rail incident.
About it. That's right. Sounds like the porno Axl Rose is going to have to make to get any cash in 5 years.
Well, they found out about this when they started doing regression, because there was one guy that said that he was visited by L. Ron Hubbard in some sort of like astral projection, and it was very unpleasant for him. So they're like, let's see if he's been doing anything else. So they started doing this like post this hypnotic regression on Bill Cox,
and they found out
this thing that he had done, because at the end of this hypnotism, L. Ron told him like, you will not remember any of this, and he didn't say anything to anyone. It wasn't until they did this like post hypnotic regression that they found out what L. Ron had actually done, and they're like, that's not fun.
Yeah,
it's kind of fucked up, man.
And then they're all sitting in a corner, and it's just kind of amazing. All these guys, immediately, all the authors are like, what if he's been hypnotizing all of us and we don't know?
Yeah.
So then L. Ron just shows back up being like, hey, boys, I see finger sandwiches. And they're all just like staring at him like he's the devil. Yeah. And then but it also gives them a reverse power on them, because now it's really interesting. Once you start that, and again, I think that L. Ron Hubbard did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Where he's like, now their whole reality is in doubt all the time.
Yeah. And now he's even more powerful. Now, now he's like truly becoming like a powerful magician.
In this small little world.
Yeah, in this small little world, which eventually expands into the entire world. This is where it all begins. It all begins with the Los Angeles Fantasy Science Club.
Unbelievable. Yes. And it led to Stuart Smalley.
Interesting.
He's good enough. He's smart enough.
Yeah, that is true. That is what it is.
People like him. Now he's a congressman. Or a senator, rather.
In January of 1949, Hubbard announced in a magazine called Writers, Markets, and Methods that he was working on a book of psychology. He was working on it right alongside pulp sci-fi stories like Beyond the Black Nebula and Emperor of the Universe.
These are great names.
They're all... Listen to some of these names he did for Westerns. Gun Boss of Tumbleweed.
Awesome.
And, well, this one isn't as great. Johnny the Town Tamer.
You're Naughty Town. You're Naughty Town, and I'm gonna teach y'all how to behave. You naughty, stinky little town. I'll give you a smack in your bottom, sweet little Naughty Town.
Johnny the Town Tamer sounds so fun because the horses were bad.
Naughty.
And he was just like, yo, you'll be a good horse.
You're a naughty sheriff and a naughty dog.
Oh, my goodness.
But those stories only paid a penny a word, nowhere near enough for Hubbard. In fact, he openly said this in a meeting of sci-fi writers.
Writing for a penny a word is ridiculous. If a man really wanted to make $1 million, the best way to do it would be to start his own religion.
Ooh, yes. Yeah.
He said it in a room full of people, and he said that again and again and again and again.
Barefaced Messiah by Russell Miller, I found at least 4 examples when the people have remotely said it, because they're like, it's just so funny that he went on to do it, which is like, come on, guys, he gave you the thesis statement since he was like 20, 21 years old.
I would love to see him on Shark Tank. Just looking for investors into his religious cult. Some people start a taco truck to make money, but he just went right to religion.
Yeah, well, when he was working on this book around this time, he wrote a letter to his publisher, his agent, or somebody like that.
Forey Ackerman.
Yeah, Forey Ackerman. And he was like, I haven't decided whether I'm going to destroy the Catholic Church or build a new one.
He's like, you gotta stop it, LRH. You're making me laugh so hard I'm gonna so shit funny. My giant pants.
Forey Ackerman had huge pants. Forey Ackerman is a favorite. He's a very famous presence in the world of sci-fi and horror. He was like, he was one of the first like super fans. He was a horror host, and it was a weird part of history and pop culture that he was L. Ron Hubbard's fucking book agent.
Well, why were his pants so big? Was he a big guy or a small guy in big pants?
He's just one of those like skinny guys, but looks real, real big because he wears big pants up to his nipples.
oh, tall pants.
Yeah.
High pants. Sure.
Now, the fact that a popular sci-fi writer was working on a new sort of psychology was extremely exciting to sci-fi fans who were starting to get a little smug about their own place in society. They believed that since sci-fi writers had been predicting future technologies in their stories for years, that it would only be a matter of time before one of them would create a science all of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they believed we are going to save the world. Sci-fi is the most important literary advancement in the history of man because we will save the universe.
Well, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to get food for everybody, and then we're going to end slavery. That's the second thing. It's going to be absolutely tremendous. It's going to be absolutely fabulous. But the third thing that actually needs to come before all of that is that I'm writing this book about intergalactic space witches that run everything with their orgasm muscles, and the lead character, his dick is so strong, and he kind of looks like a fat little man with a beret on, not unlike myself.
Yeah.
And his dick could control the universe because just how thick he can come.
Okay. Okay, so after we make Captain Cockpilot, then
we'll get food for everyone.
Then we get to food, and then we get to end suffering.
Because I think we should feed the slaves first, right? But then make them not slaves anymore.
Right. So, but you do want to write this first.
Absolutely, it's got orbs in it.
Okay.
The psychology was perfect for this new science because you didn't need all that bothersome math or physics or anything like that in order to do it. And this right here was extremely important to the initial success of Dianetics.
Not saying that he didn't include a couple equations in Dianetics, because he did. And they make no sense.
Yeah, because he was also telling people that he was a fucking nuclear physicist.
Yeah.
And I think one person said that they read some of his papers on nuclear physics, and they said that it was like an undergrad student who half paid attention to one lecture and then tried to write a graduate thesis.
That describes his life pretty perfectly.
Yeah.
Well, apparently to him, there's several stories that built up the nuclear physicist level, where it started with the idea for Dianetics came when he died on the operating table during an explosion when he was fighting in the theater of war, Japan.
Yes.
Which he did not do.
No.
But he said in the vision that he died and that he had died on the operating table. He went to heaven. He saw the tomes of all knowledge, started reading them, and then all of a sudden the hand of fate itself came and said, "It's not your time yet, Elrond," and threw him back into his body. And then that came from, he was in the hospital for a long period of time. He said that while he was convalescing in the hospital, he would go read nuclear physicists like textbooks and psychology textbooks, and like basically prison educated himself while in the hospital. And then the next one is, I was a nuclear scientist.
Yeah, it's like that caller you had on your radio show the other day that said that he went to the University of YouTube.
University of YouTube, and he broke down the intelligence of the races. You know, working at Fox News Radio, you get some really interesting conservative opinions. Yeah, YouTube University, self-educated in every way, just like L. Ron Hubbard.
Now, these sci-fi fans wanted to believe so bad that one of their own was going to create create something that would truly change the world. And as far as they were concerned, Hubbard was the perfect guy to do it. He was an explorer, a war hero, a daredevil pilot.
He had the look. He had the cock.
Yeah. I guess so.
He was everything they wanted to be while still being one of them at the same time. You know what I mean?
Like, I know what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, he was able, like we were talking about with his wealthy grandfather, but his working class dad.
This was like Linsanity. Linsanity for the LA sci-fi community.
Jeremy Lin. You're bringing in Linsanity? That was like 5 years ago.
No, it still is. I think it's in Houston now. It went out of New York. I think Jeremy Lin still has the number one jersey sales, by the way.
Really?
Yeah, because people in China they buy him up.
Huh?
They love
it. Yeah, they love it because also they fashion homes out of them.
That's not true. Linsanity.
Yeah, and these guys, these sci-fi writers, they were perfectly manipulated into thinking that L. Ron Hubbard was actually going to deliver on all this. See, Dianetics.
Huh. Where have we heard that before?
Yeah. A lot of parallels between L. Ron Hubbard and what's going on in the United States right now. As we get further and further on, like, you start hearing about all this shit and like, wow. Like, it's just tactics. Like, these tactics just work again and again and again to fool people.
Well, you got to put it this way, so we keep forgetting that it works.
Well, it just and then works. That's why it works, right?
But, like, we all just forget that it works, and you don't realize that it's been this way since the beginning of this country. This whole country was built on bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, so
the whole world.
And it also,
the whole world was built on bullshit.
And it happens to everybody. Yeah. It does not matter who it is. Dianetics, Scientology, all this stuff is started by super smart people.
And just look what happens with modern country music. They tell us it's good.
They
everyone
do
knows
tell
it's
us
not.
It's good.
Dianetics was first teased in the December 1949 issue of Astounding Science Fiction, in which the editor wrote that a fantastic new science was soon to debut in its pages. He wrote,
"The power is almost unbelievable. It proves the mind not only can, but does rule the body completely, and I am just covered in hives about it."
The nerds made nuclear weapons. The nerd, I don't think...
Nerds are incredibly dangerous.
Yeah, why do we...
Because he's also, nerds are great, and they're sweet, and they're enthusiastic.
I don't know. I mean, what do jocks really do other than certain things that are atrocious? But for the most part, but that is, okay, what?
Jocks rape way more than nerds rape.
No, that's, we don't know. There's no evidence about the chess clubs.
I don't need evidence. Donald Trump and L. Ron Hubbard said I don't need evidence.
Oh, well, it doesn't. They score touchdowns, and they shoot, they make dunks.
No, in April, the hype got even bigger. The editor wrote that this new technique of psychotherapy would cure insanity, which was contagious, by the way, not hereditary.
Yeah, you fucking idiots. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. Yeah, we better wear those weird Chinese face masks around Marcus.
Just a surgical mask.
Not the engrams.
And also, the techniques could also give a man a perfect memory and a higher IQ. It would also not just alleviate, but completely cure all of the most common nerd diseases like ulcers, sinusitis, and asthma.
Which is interesting because they're all stuff that L. Ron suffered from.
Yeah.
And the same thing, because he said that he was blind in the hospital, one of the main stories that came out, and that he had used the principles of Dianetics to heal himself. So he said it was eye problems, feet and limb problems, because he said he had problems with his foot, and he said he had problems with his ulcers. And he said using Dianetics, he fixed all that in his body because it's all in the mind.
The power of positive thinking.
Exactly. And since nerds demand evidence, it had also been tested. It was claimed that over 250 people have been cured using this new technique.
That's the sound of quotation marks.
Cured. Yeah.
Now, one of those people was a man named John Campbell, one of Hubbard's earliest followers. Campbell was a man of science and appreciated Hubbard's so-called scientific approach to the mind.
Because he needed a scientist to help verify everything he was talking about. He at least needed a guy on the payroll that he could attach to the book. So he called up this guy being like, "I think I can fix your problems with my mind." And again, these scientists are not very impressive people. All it takes
Well, they are impressive. They're scientists.
But not impressive like in a room. L. Ron Hubbard Hubbard was a fucking man of character and class. This is a man I honestly feel like we're actually pretty...
A man of wealth and fame.
I know. I feel like he's a Rolling Stone in some ways.
But it's kind of like in the H.H. Holmes days, where she's like in a room of the most impenetrable, thick suspended nerds. It's if you can figure out how to talk fast and have flaming red hair, like I also did as a boy, you could keep a bunch of nerds' attention.
Yeah, sure. I'm an attractive guy in an AA meeting with people who were previously addicted to meth or something.
Yeah.
Doesn't make me attractive.
Make yourself a 10 in whatever situation you're in.
I suppose so.
Now, Hubbard compared the human brain to a computer in which one could recall and erase memories using a form of hypnosis.
Which Robert Anton Wilson officially disputes and destroys in his book Prometheus Rising, which you'd look if you're a really true student of magical thinking.
Yes, or if you want to have a good relationship, don't. Don't read it. What is it, though, with these science minds, right? I mean, obviously, they're really intellectual, but then they're so dumb and ignorant. Like Steve Jobs, for example, not going the medical route for his surgery or for his cancer.
Well, they want it to be technical. Like, they want to understand it because the human brain is the one thing that we still don't understand. We understand so very little about how the mind actually works.
But also... It's, again, it boils down to the simplest, it's packaging.
Yeah.
Nerds want a nerdy looking thing.
Right.
Look at me, right? I like creepy shit.
Right.
You could sell me on anything if you put a bunch of creepy shit on it. I'm like, oh, cool. Oh, nice.
Oh, my God.
I'll take it. I'll buy it. Give it to me. Like me screaming.
For years and years, I solely rented movies based on the cover.
Yeah.
So I was like, I watched Jack Frost a lot because that the cover was awesome because the snowman melted into a monster.
Yeah. Why do you think we all love Evil Dead 2 so much? Because it's the coolest fucking movie poster that's ever existed.
Watched it last night. Oh, yeah. Bad. Oh, my God. Yeah, so good.
Now, Campbell would be one of the first test subjects in what would eventually become auditing, which we'll get...
Yes.
Into more in depth later. In Campbell's first session, he was guided further and further back into his memory, resurrecting long forgotten events along the way until he had finally arrived at the moment of his birth. Somehow, this resulted in Campbell's sinusitis almost completely clearing up, or so he said, and so John Campbell became Hubbard's first big booster.
He hypnotized him, essentially.
I'm visualizing this. I saw the movie Get Out. Catherine Keener is so awesome. They do a hypnotism scene in that. It's badass. Good. That's what I'm thinking about now.
Oh, yeah. Now, after he was converted, Campbell wrote about his experience to Dr. Joseph Winter, who was a general practitioner. He was an actual MD who contributed medical articles to Astounding Sci-Fi.
I wish this magazine was still around, like a thing like this was still around.
Have you ever gotten a hold of an old, like, 50s pulp magazine and flipped through?
No.
They're fucking awesome. They're so much fun.
I didn't get that shit.
You're going into a doctor. You got to get a tumor removed. You find out he's a sci-fi writer.
Well, no, he's not a sci-fi writer. He contributes medical articles to a science fiction magazine.
He's a fun guy.
Just don't know if I would trust him with a knife in my skin.
Now, at first unconvinced, Winter decided to test the method on his 6-year-old son, who had just come up with a fear of ghosts, which he believed were constantly lying in wait to strangle him.
You know what? I'm never going to tell my kid that's not true. He's going to be like, yes.
Son, ghosts are real, and they will strangle you, and I will tell you one thing. All women leave.
Yes. And I heard there was a Coors Light in the fridge for adults like your father. Why don't you just go be a good...
Why don't you go see if you can discover it and bring it back for
yourself? Oh, yes. You don't want to anger the ghost. He likes to Coors Lights, too.
When the child described the ghost, they were found to look like doctors in surgical gowns. And so, using this method, they eventually traced the fear back to the son's difficult birth, in which the umbilical cord was wrapped around his neck.
Freud!
And by exposing a painful past experience, they found that the boy's fear of the dark had disappeared. So Winter figured there must be something to this new science, and so he joined on to fully develop Dianetics.
Yeah, so you got these boys on guard.
These two guys. He got a scientist and he got an MD on board.
Yeah, right. He's got his little Stevie.
Reputable people, yeah.
And he's got his...
his Clarence.
Yeah.
It's Clarence
Clemens. Eastbound and Down?
No, Bruce Springsteen.
Eastern
Dan. Oh, okay. The little Stevie from Eastbound and Down. Remember
that? I remember that.
Yeah.
Now, these three dudes, first started working on the terminology. Their first name for painful past experiences was impediment, but that didn't have enough juice.
You need something nice.
You need something good. Like, impediment, that's too many syllables.
Right.
They eventually settled on engram, which was a medical term for a lasting mark or trace.
God, that must have felt like when you named the Rubik's Cube. Yeah. When you name, and you're like, yeah, that's got snap.
Yeah, speech impediment is kind of a mean-spirited term for the disease because it's hard to say.
Well, what do you want to say? You got you got Wally mouth?
I don't know. Oh, doesn't necessarily force them to shine with their impediment.
This guy's got jungy lip.
That's you could say that without stuttering. Jungy lip rolls off the tongue.
Engrams were caused by aberrations, which were caused by physical and emotional pain, which were triggered by a perceptic, which is any sense message like sight, sound, or smell. And since pain was a threat to survival, the conscious mind sought to avoid it.
You know, Hubbard felt that the key to all humankind was to survive.
Yeah.
Well, that would make a lot of sense.
Like, survival was the most important thing, and that is very important to understanding how L. Ron Hubbard. He believed that survival, the only thing that mattered in life. Nothing else mattered but survival. It wasn't just a base, like, you know, because all of us, our base emotion is survival. But for him, that's all it was. And when someone's only goal is survival, that makes them an extremely dangerous person.
Meanwhile, his children are out there looking like Pigpen from Peanuts because they're poor and miserable.
But you see, he breaks it up into four dynamics, though. So it's like survival ends up fitting into this weird, because then he tries it, because it starts really selfish, but then as you read Dianetics, you start seeing, oh, he's covering up his tracks, because then it turns into the four dynamics, which is you have to do something, one, that helps just you and your career and your success and your personal survival. Two, whatever helps you get laid to make more people to have the human race serve to continue to go on. Three, that which helps the world, that which helps the earth in order to have the place for all of us to live and to survive on. And number four, whatever is a macro thing that helps all humankind.
And then there was number five, where it's like, women wipe front to back. Yeah. Boys, feel free to write, wipe back to front.
And
it doesn't matter.
Do it sideways.
Boys, it doesn't matter for
boys
us.
Boys don't have matter. To wipe.
So these engrams would be filed away in what the three men dubbed the reactive mind, which was the unconscious side of the mind, where they caused all sorts of problems for people.
And they said the engrams could only build up in your body if you're unconscious or dead, which possibly means that we live multiple lives, right? This idea that you collect engrams onto your life track.
I mean, that really, the life track and the engrams and the past lives and the multiple lives and all that, that's really, when he gets into Scientology, that's when that shit really starts getting
He
starts ramping it up, and in fact makes it a central tenet of the religion.
Well, that's why you have to sign the billion-year contract.
Yep, the billion-year contract.
Love that kind of job security.
Now, the purpose of Dianetics would be to access those engrams and refile them to the analytical side of the mind, which was the conscious mind.
Smarty pants brain.
And once refiled, they could be erased, and once they were erased, the mind could operate at full efficiency. The person would have total recall, his IQ would rise, he would be confident, and all psychosomatic illnesses would be cured.
Yes, and he would become what is now known, which is the famous term, clear.
Yeah.
And that is the ultimate goal of Dianetics, is to become clear, which means you have no more engrams.
Engrams.
You could jump higher, your sight, and he said...
can't actually jump higher, you just think that you're jumping higher, but then everyone just sees you like... Oh.
Yeah, but guess what? But they see how high you think you're jumping, and then they get impressed, and eventually they start seeing you jumping as high as you think you're jumping.
See? I don't. Is that what happened with Spud Webb? I don't know.
Now, of course, to come up with all this, Hubbard, Winter, and Campbell had to have a singular obsession with the subject. This obsession led to Campbell's divorce, which whose wife cited Dianetics as, quote, the last straw.
Oh my God, hilarious.
God, just hanging out with L. Ron Hubbard all day, you're just gonna go hang out with this screaming maniac all day writing, and he's just like, I'm on the verge of a breakthrough.
Yeah. I gotta say, usually when wives hate their husband's friends, they're right.
Usually.
Sometimes not, but usually.
Yeah. Now, but Campbell didn't really seem to care, as people do in situations like this, for the dawn of a new age was upon them. In the May 1950 issue of Astounding Science Fiction, which featured an alien monkey on the cover,
Mac and me,
the new science was finally debuted. In this article, Hubbard outlined everything that he and the other two dudes had come up with, but it was nothing more than a preview to get the full story on how you could actually do this yourself in your own home. You'd have to pay $4 for a copy of Dianetics, The Modern Science of Mental Health.
Wow. Yeah. And so now,
that's for 1950s, $4, that goes a long way.
Yeah,
that's $4. That's about $25 our money.
Yeah, $4 is a whole prostitute.
At least.
For her life.
Is that the way that you you think of money in your head?
Not always. Yeah. In people money. Yeah. I got myself a copy of Dianetics. First of all, he did a great job about like putting the power in your hands.
Mm-hmm.
True self-help idea. At this point, I do believe that L. Ron Hubbard did feel that he could flip all this into a Tony Robbins type thing, right?
Right.
That he can genuinely help people, even if it's bullshit. He'll turn it, somehow he will ass backwards, fall his way into being a true savior of humankind, and not for altruistic reasons, but because it will make him super rich and powerful. But you also then get the good points, too. Well,
it's interesting you mentioned Tony Robbins, because I was thinking about him watching this documentary last night, and the thing that Tony Robbins understands is the power that he harnesses.
Yeah.
And that's why he's very aware of not becoming a cult deity.
He gave it all away.
He did.
He's giving it all away. L. Ron Hubbard's keeping everything for himself.
Yeah. Because he's an egomaniac. I mean, obviously, I'm sure Tony Robbins has some egomaniac traits too, but at least he's aware.
Yes. Yeah, he's aware. No, Tony Robbins is fine.
I like him.
Yeah.
He's 6'7". Good guy.
He is a big man.
He's my size, exactly.
I read 186 pages of Dianetics, and it is thick and dumb.
It is terrible. It is an awful book.
And I got to the point where I literally started looking up. I was just like, all right, there's got to be like a cliff notes of this. And so I found a blog called The Dianetic Journey. And it was this woman that was like open to the very beginning. She was just like, I wanted to get into Dianetics because I was trying to figure out a new way to like to think about the world and think about all this stuff. And it's her going through literally the same journey that I'm going through, going, huh, that's kind of interesting. That doesn't make any sense. Chapter 2 doesn't make any sense. And it seems like all of this is a scam.
But no one wants to be taken advantage of. No one wants to be a fool. So they try to rationalize this stuff, right? Because they bought it for $4.
Yeah, if you get through it. I mean, the whole thing is, I mean, it's pretty much like a near incomprehensible hodgepodge of like Darwin, Pavlov, Freud, and Jung repackaged with new terms to make it sound like a completely new idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he also ripped off Eastern philosophy a bit in the form of the tone scale, which is just like a reworking of the karmic wheel, but with graphs.
The tone scale was essentially what was his major breakthrough for Dianetics, which is going to carry over to Scientology, which is this sort of concept of, it's a graph of happiness and how that leads towards immortality. It's just this graph that's like, there's four zones 1 through 4, and there's numbers within those zones that are attached to your general attitude, and the farther you go up the scale, like a 0 is called total apathy, and that means that you are dead, which means that essentially your mood is connected straight to your survival rate. So as you go up the tone scale by getting rid of engrams, you slowly go up towards completely happy in zone 4, which brings you as close to immortality as possible.
But you know, zone 0 gives us Nirvana. Zone 4 gives us Devo. So I kind of like zone 0.
Wait. Are you talking shit on Devo right now?
I love Devo. Yeah, I'm not
Devo
talking
fucking
shit.
Amazing.
I'm just saying. But if you really want to talk about music, Nirvana's better than Devo.
I cannot say that.
No, this is not even a conversation that we're having.
I love
you
Devo.
You can whip it good.
That's not the only song. Yeah, listen to the song Mongoloid.
Yeah, Q are We Not Men, A We Are Devo.
Yeah, you idiot.
Yeah.
I love you, though.
I will never. No, I'm not. I don't even care. If you,
freedom
know,
of choice? I mean, for fuck's sake, man.
I got to go. Every single album that Nirvana put out is better than the best album that Devo put out. That is a fun song when driving fast, yes. But when actually contemplating life, I'm not even going to argue this with you fucking. I'm going to call you Nimrods. But no, I did have this, question. When it comes to Scientology, is Dianetics the Bible of Scientology?
It is the
egg. Or is
egg,
it more?
No, it's layer one.
It's different, right?
No, it's a different thing. It's the foundation, but it's not the Bible.
That's what
we're
going
really.
Yeah. What we're going we'll get to it. Is that Dianetics fixes the body. Scientology fixes the soul.
Yeah.
When he talked, the way he spins it out is that the more research he does, he expands what he knows about the universe.
Yeah,
fucking Nirvana Unplugged alone is better than every single Devo album combined.
Mark Mothersbaugh went on to make some of the most incredible soundtracks, movie soundtracks.
Oh
in the
my
whole.
God.
Yeah, and by the way, Nirvana Unplugged is pretty much a fucking covers album.
Yeah, thank God. And it's covered by a great heroin addict who I love.
Kurt Cobain was murdered
by Courtney.
He was not keeping his head on a fucking swivel.
No, he was. No, he definitely was. He was more like a limp.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
don't get me wrong. I love Nirvana. And Utero is one of my favorite albums. All right.
Yeah, I like it too. Yeah.
Okay. Well,
the first girl I ever had a crush on, Nicole Lopez, had green hair in, and she carved Kurt into her arm, and that's how I fell in love with goth chicks for the rest of my life.
Healthy.
She's healthy. Today's last podcast on the left is brought to you by Hunt-A-Killer. By now, you've probably heard about Hunt-A-Killer, the murdery mystery subscription box service that delivers new clues to your doorstep every month. Hunt-A-Killer puts your true crime sleuthing skills to the test, and you don't even have to leave your house. The stories unfold with an ongoing creepy correspondence. Things like letters, articles, objects, and tools, all from a Hannibal Lecter-type killer curator. Hunt-A-Killer has been featured in BuzzFeed, Fast Company, and the editors at Bustle are writing weekly about their experience. One of the best parts about Hunt-A-Killer is the online community of armchair detectives that work together on the mystery, and people really are obsessed. It's like living in your true crime series. There's secret Facebook groups, forums, podcasts, and live videos to contribute to the experience. All you have to do is apply for membership at huntakiller.com. They only let a few hundred new members in a month, so don't wait too long. They have different subscription plans to choose from, and Hunt-A-Killer also makes an incredible gift. We all have that special person in our lives that is just as secretly obsessed with true crime as we are. There's really nothing out there like this. To help support our show, they've offered a 10% discount for our listeners. Use the code LEFT and get 10% off. So head on over to huntakiller.com and register now. Come join the hunt.
Now, in addition to all the pseudoscientific nonsense and Dianetics, it also has a few choice words to say about women. Huh. See, Ingrams can be implanted as far back as the womb, sometimes even within 24 hours of conception. And women, according to Hubbard, were unfaithful creatures who often had affairs with other men while they were pregnant.
Honestly, Dianetics reads as somebody is just the most bitter, disgusting shit about women. It's really fucked up.
I love the way that a man who abandons his family somehow has a way to vilify women at the end of all this.
Oh, always. Yes, yeah. Some of the worst Ingrams came when a woman, while having sex with her lover, she's cheating on her husband with, she would badmouth her husband to her lover while they were fucking.
L. Ron Hubbard did steal a woman away from Jack Parsons and take her on a boat, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And the in utero child, if the child was named after the husband, would be born with an inferiority complex because her mother was fucking another dude and for some reason was talking about how much she hates her husband while they were having sex.
In Utero, another great Nirvana album. And remember when we mentioned Evil Dead? We mentioned Evil Dead, and then Campbell was the next word to come out of your mouth. It's all coming together.
Synchronicities.
Interesting.
Yeah, and also, you know, he said that all feeble-minded people were the result of attempted abortions, and all of these women, for the most part, their main method of attempted abortion was to stab knitting needles into their stomach.
Or up their vaginas and stir the soup. And he was very, like, he's saying that most women tried to abort the baby.
Like Albert Fish comes.
Yeah. And furthermore, a pregnant woman might ruin her child by being constipated.
So I'm assuming he's a pro-lifer then, huh?
Yeah. Well, on the toilet, the woman, if she's constipated, she might say, and this right here, this excerpt, this is Ron's words. This is from Dianetics.
So this is a woman on the toilet constipated.
This is a woman on the toilet constipated, and this is something that a pregnant woman, might say when she is constipated.
He felt the need to,
in order to implant an Ingram.
This is hell. I'm all jammed up inside. I feel so stuffy. I can't think. This is too terrible to be born.
I don't think she was having sex.
Yeah, what is happening?
That's how I'm edited in his head, is that he's imagining it's kind of sexy for a pregnant woman to be all constipated on the toilet.
Oh, that was the most disgusting thing I've ever heard. That was since Toy Box Killer. I haven't been so creeped out.
I'm not having one.
Definitely not.
I hated that.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We all agree.
And anybody who got hard while driving down the street while listening to that, you get a gold star.
No one got a gold star on that.
Now, this may result in then chronic colds for the child, who is so stuffy he can't think.
Oh, yeah, all jammed up. All fucking just absolutely stretched out with snot.
Why would he even feel the need to extrapolate on this? Why would he even talk about this?
All of his examples are ridiculous.
They're all super weird.
He writes about hypnotism and things that can go wrong, how ingrains can be placed for 10 pages.
But how does he take that and be like, I'll make the analogy about a chick pooping?
I do not know.
I'm pretty sure that his first wife had a lot of constipation while she was pregnant. He was like, that's how all of them are.
Oh, is that baby was forming inside of her? She was a little gassy.
Yeah.
Well, she's tooting for two.
Yeah, and the kid might also have an inferiority complex from being too terrible to be born, like a piece of, like a rump full of dump.
Like a rump full of dump. You know how I was always named Rump Dump.
Rump full of dump?
Yeah. Hubbard also wasted no time ripping into medical professionals. It's very likely that Hubbard was smart enough to know that if his new science gained traction, the mental health professionals were sure to have a few choice words to say about him, which they fucking did.
Of course.
They absolutely
Everybody flipped out.
Hated it. Yeah. Everybody did.
I'm sorry. I just have to say, I can't stop thinking of Eeyore would be happier if they made a character called Rump Full of Dump that could have been Eeyore's girlfriend in Winnie the Pooh.
So he's supposed to. It would make him happy.
He was sad because he was
alone.
To
have sex with another weird mule that smells like shit.
I don't know what
it
looks like.
Her name is Rump and a Dump.
No, Rump Full of Dump.
Rump Full of Dump.
I just tried to Rump a Dump.
Oh, Rump-a-Dump.
Rump-a-Dump.
I'm Eeyore. This is my wife, Rump-a-Dump. I used to be sad, but now I'm happy because Rump-a-Dump's around.
And of course, Hubbard, you know, predicting that the medical health profession was going to come after him, that's why he issued a preemptive strike accusing mental health professionals of either making their patients worse just so they could scam money from him, or by being guilty of zombifying every patient they could get their hands on, just for the fun of it. And that would become a core tenet of Scientology still to this day. Mental health professionals are just out to get you. Antidepressants and any sort of medication is evil and only creates more Ingrams, and all medical professionals are the devil. Again, example being Nicole Kidman's father. The reason why he was an SP was because he was one of the most famous psychiatrists in all of Australia.
And they would call them psychs, and again, it started with doctors, and then eventually the lore turned into they were the embodiment of demons that were billions of years old.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the third part of the book was the actual practice of Dianetics. In order to go from being pre-clear, which is chock full of Ingrams, to being clear, which is no Ingrams, one had to go through the process of auditing. Now, auditing was done in a dark room in which the pre-clear would be guided into what Hubbard called a Dianetic reverie, all under the supervision of an auditor. Once you reached reverie, you could move back further and further through your life up to the moment of birth, sometimes going back to the moment of conception, which Hubbard called a sperm dream.
Which I called the seventh grade.
Yeah, a sperm dream indeed. Isn't that a form of psychiatry in itself?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, of course it is.
What he's saying is that he's saying this is a new form of psychotherapy. And,
right.
Do it yourself.
It's do it yourself. It's do it with a buddy. Is that your buddy can be your auditor.
Yeah.
Also anybody can train to be an auditor, because after this comes out, it starts off with anybody can be an auditor, and then it turns into give me $500 and I'll teach you how to be an auditor.
And it's interesting. Oh my God. Yeah. They have another example in that documentary I saw with an actor who wanted to, he saw an ad in Backstage magazine. He ended up spending $50,000 in 3 years on these dumb, stupid ass books. But that's another thing that a lot of cults do, the holistic route. Like my parents, we didn't have medicine. We had an aloe vera plant for 3 years.
Oh, that's
No matter what you were sick with, you're just like, suck on the plant. And that was supposed to work.
Suck on the plant.
Well, it wasn't like that, Henry.
Suck on
do
the
not
plant.
Do not taint my childhood.
To watch you
do
suck
not taint
the
childhood
plant.
Memories with your version of it.
So as you went further back into your memory, you would discover Ingrams, which once discovered could be filed into the analytical mind and erased. For example, one guy said that he saw two bulging eyes while he was being audited, which he said looked like popping eyes.
Ooh.
Popping eyes became Popeyes, like Popeye the Sailor Man.
Sure.
Which became poppies.
It sounds like we're in a room where people are writing one of those dumb shit commercials for the Super Bowl. It doesn't make any sense. You don't know what it is until it gets to the end. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you know what? We're going to put Selma Hayek in it.
Ooh,
that's a great idea.
Mexican. Poppies made the guy think of a poem. I think it was a John Donne poem. It said, "In Flanders fields the poppies grow by the crosses row on row." Crosses made him think of his brother who had died at a young age years earlier. He then came upon the engram that was created by his brother's death, which he had never quite dealt with, and he discovered that after finding and dealing with it, he felt better.
Which is actually, of course, though. Of course you feel better if you think about something. And also, people love to talk about themselves, so you immediately feel better when you're talking about yourself.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, I just don't know why they have to attend, because that's just a rule of improv. They just found the scene, and the scene happened to be his dead brother, and that's where that's what was the crux of the angst.
It's also that scene from Black Dynamite, where he's doing the conspiracy breakdown restaurant.
Yeah, that's the first reference to Black Dynamite.
Congratulations, everyone.
Thank you.
That's interesting.
Now, this happened again and again with people. And so the thought process went that if auditing worked, then maybe there was something to Dianetics as a whole. And by extension, when Scientology came around, maybe there was something to that too. Because auditing did make some people feel better. So when someone felt better through auditing, mostly by just having someone listen to them talk about their problems for 2 hours, they would audit two friends, and they would audit two friends, and so on, and so on.
Yeah, they would hold auditing parties where people would get together and audit each other, and it became the thing to do in L.A.
Yeah.
L.A. is the birthplace of some of our worst ideas.
Yes. It's the worst place in America.
The weather is too nice.
Honestly.
The weather is just too nice. The sun fries your brain.
The worst place in America is still, it's got to be Gary, Indiana.
No, I love Gary, Indiana.
Gary, Indiana's a bad place.
No, it's fine. Good people.
No, and I'm sorry, LA. You is not the worst place in America. Can't wait to see you at the Masonic Lodge Hollywood Forever Cemetery.
No, not all of LA.
I just got my own issues with it, all right?
Gary, Indiana.
Gary's a fine place.
Now, in just 2 months, Dianetics sold over 55,000 copies.
Wow.
And had topped the Los Angeles Times bestseller list. Over 500 Dianetics groups have been set up around the U.S., and everywhere people were firing their $15 an hour psychoanalyst for a $4 do-it-yourself mental health kit. This is 1950. People are just starting to get into psychoanalysis. People are nervous as fuck because we've got the Cold War starting to ramp up. People are looking for something, anything to make them feel better, and Dianetics was a cheap and easy way.
And you have a whole generation of dudes back from World War II.
Yeah.
That had just been to these, and there's a lot of weird psychological problems that a lot of these guys, my grandfather even vaguely talked about, like, because of the nature of the war and because there were such clear delineated lines between who's good guys and bad guys, the people that came back they didn't even really think that they had shell shock or, like, dealt with horrors of the war until now you have a whole generation of guys that kind of, like, there's an influx of money, the economy's boosting in America, they're like, okay, it's time to make babies and have houses, and everybody's shattered from killing people for 5 years.
Yeah. So, after Dianetics started selling, the real money started rolling in. Converts started flocking to the newly opened Hubbard Dianetic Research Foundation in Elizabeth, New Jersey, for training in how to become an official Hubbard-endorsed auditor. These courses cost, in 1950, $500 each, which in today's money, little over $5,000.
And if you look at the chart, you've seen the Dianetics chart.
Yeah.
It's just a perfect example of just breadcrumb. It's such a genius marketing scam.
Well, yes. It started with, in Dianetics, there was an end to it. There was CLEAR. CLEAR was the highest level. That's what everybody was trying to get to. And then once Scientology started, that's when the goalposts started moving. That's when all the OT shit started.
Right.
The Operating Thetan stuff, which we'll get into on the next episode.
Dianetics also had a little bit of a back door in there where how CLEAR was on a permanent state.
Ah.
CLEAR you could bounce in and out of. So if you hit CLEAR, it's great. You can be made CLEAR.
You can go back down.
Yeah, you can go back down.
And L. Ron Hubbard also had a great way of being kind of like self-effacing by saying, even I'm not CLEAR. Like, CLEAR is something that even I haven't came upon yet.
Well, he started there. And then eventually he became Lord Jesus Christ of everything.
Yeah.
Eventually. Now, On August 10th, Hubbard hosted an event at the Shrine Auditorium in L.A. to unveil the world's first clear. This is just maybe, what, 3 months after Scientology came out? Her name was Sonia, and Hubbard was going to demonstrate to an audience of about 6,000 people just what they could hope to accomplish if only they were to buy Dianetics and see it through to the end. Mm-hmm. So Sonia came on stage and said that Dianetics had cleared her sinuses and had cured her, quote, strange and embarrassing allergy to pain, although I don't really know what the fuck a strange and embarrassing allergy to pain actually is.
Is that the one thing I experienced in the emergency room when the guy was cauterizing my thumb and I was bellowing like I was having an earth-shattering orgasm? Is that what it is?
I don't know why you would ejaculate during that experience.
No,
but
I was just screaming.
Yeah, but that's not an allergy to pain. That's just pain.
Yeah, that's just pain. I don't know what an allergy to pain
is. It's all horseshit.
Yeah. Okay. Because, well, the audience thought it was horseshit, too. They were underwhelmed. They were showing up expecting to see the next stage of human evolution, and instead, it was just a woman named Sonia going, like, my sinuses are clear.
Right.
Like, aren't you happy?
It could just be like a fucking MyPillow commercial.
So ooh, these,
I love MyPillow.
So Hubbard, he felt like he's about to lose the audience, so he makes the mistake of taking questions from the crowd. And the crowd, they knew, they had read Dianetics, so they started, and they knew that if you were clear, then you had perfect recall of your memory.
Uh-oh.
So someone shouted, what'd you have for breakfast on October 3rd, 1942?
I know for a fact it wasn't.
Yogurt parfait.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Just say yogurt parfait.
It wasn't a Dookie milkshake.
We need to get a different producer in his ear.
And then another one asked, what's on page 122 of Dianetics?
It says something about making yourself have an abortion.
And then when Hubbard turned his back to her, one smartass yelled, quick, what color tie's Hubbard wearing?
Something to do with abortion.
What in the world?
She had no answer to any of this. She completely and totally froze. And Hubbard,
wow, shocking.
Mean, yeah, Hubbard, I mean, he tried to recover. The only thing he could come up with was that when he called her out on stage, she became frozen in present time, and it had blocked her total recall.
Genius, Elrond.
Good
genius.
Work, good cover.
Yeah, and so she needed to become clear again.
I see. So yeah, she's going to pay another $50,000 to do that. Yeah. It reminds me when Rush Limbaugh had that short-lived television show, and they had to escort the audience out because he got booed off stage. Do you remember that?
I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, he's such a jackass. He started doing a monologue. Everyone booed him, and they had to get the audience out. When they came back to commercial, it was just him in an empty room.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, in the modern age, an incident like this would have been caught on video and uploaded to YouTube before the night was even over.
And religion is dead in the womb.
It is
DOA.
Yeah. I mean, this whole thing is over and done with. But in 1950, it was nothing more than a bad night, and Hubbard moved on.
Yeah, because you have to count upon the word of the paper boys. And everyone knows those little paper boys will say anything for a nickel. Anything.
Okay.
Now, in just a short couple of months, Dianetics had offices in New York, D.C., Chicago, and Honolulu.
Ooh.
And headquarters in California, located in a former governor's mansion called the Casa.
Ooh, Mexican.
Well, yeah, it was Spanish. They was Spanish architecture. So they're like, it was the Casa. Ooh.
That's fun. Honolulu is a fun name.
I love Honolulu. Waikiki? Yeah.
Why not?
I'd say that it's cute, but essentially, but it is a whole race. You know what I mean? So it's not cute. It's just how they live.
Honolulu? Oh, you mean the Polynesians?
Yeah. You know,
what are you talking about?
They live, and it seems cute. But
it is cute.
But they're also very, I'm sure that they're vicious, but also erotic, and also sad. You know what I mean?
They're people.
Well, yeah, they did once
have a king.
Cool.
Yes, once.
But all this money's coming in. Ron wasn't any better with money than he was when he spent the money he made writing Buckskin Brigades on a boat. He also refused to delegate authority as he was becoming increasingly paranoid that the CIA had hitmen after him because he was just that goddamn important.
Well, now you're seeing the manic faces come in and out, becoming less, more like fantastic and awesome. He's buying everybody beers at the bar and like let's all jump off the bridge. You mean like having fun times, that kind of manic, into real paranoid delusions, and then eventually that will spiral into depression.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that happens sometimes. I mean, because it's really starting to become apparent that L. Ron Hubbard is manic depressed. suppress it, because sometimes when you start getting a lot of success, when you start getting a lot of endorphins rushing in, that will flip a switch on you, and the manic turns from I'm going to write all night to everybody's out to get me, which turns into depression. And it's just like this never-ending cycle. And this is something that would go on. Like, L. Ron Hubbard would never recover from this because, of course, he would never fucking get help for any of it because he thought that auditing was going to fix all of his fucking problems.
Right.
When, in fact, auditing probably made it even worse because auditing was actually proven to drive people literally insane.
It would
drive people to the nut house.
But also, it's him believing his own lies.
Yeah.
And the end, and also, I feel like even at this point, he doesn't yet fully believe his own lies.
Yeah.
He does sort of know that he's supposed to say, auditing will fix all my problems, because he's telling everybody that auditing will fix all your problems, but the auditing is not fixing his problems.
Yeah.
You'll find out later that he kept the auditing records, that he kept every one of them. There's like tons of them, literally tons in weight of his auditing records that all show that he learned nothing.
And during that process, they were, at this point, were they holding the truth sticks or whatever?
The e-meter had not showed up.
Not yet. Okay. And the nut house, by the way, actually has no nuts in it, which I do want to clarify.
That is cute.
Little bowls of cashews or something.
Now, Hubbard's mistress at the time, Barbara, described him as vain, arrogant, self-centered, and unable to tolerate any frustration of any kind on top of a heavy drinking habit.
Now, Barbara was beautiful.
Yeah.
Barbara was...
Well, all of Elrond's wives and mistresses were all beautiful.
Very beautiful. And she described him as flabby, and she did not know why she was attracted to him, except for his wonderful ideas, which... Guys, gotta get some wonderful ideas.
Interesting. All you have to do is be interesting and not creepy about it and not self-righteous about it.
He was also funny. As Leo said, he was funny, and he used to play ukulele, and he asked a lot of time. He used to put funny costumes on, and he'd act stuff out.
This drunk, dumpy shithead also plays the ukulele?
Yeah.
I would fucking beat him up every day of his life.
This was before. That was when it was Hawaiian and not like... folksy art girl. Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah, yeah.
God, there was a ukulele. I don't know. Yeah. Dreadful.
And actually, Barbara and Elrond had quite the interesting relationship.
Now, they had an on and off again affair that was very, very tumultuous. And the two of them were the way he put it is like, so now Elrond is this nerd who has made a bunch of people start worshiping him, and he's starting to get all of his dreams come true. And so what he's doing then is he plays that he's kind of already sick of his wife, who's got a kid and all fucking whatever, all that horseshit. Where it's like, now he's got this new PR woman that was supposed to help him with the people that were attacking for his religion and for the Dianetics processes that he was putting together. And
So the wife, Barbara, did he have children with Barbara also?
No.
Okay. So
No.
Just got the two kids
he
that he's abandoned, right?
He would never sully Barbara.
Now, at this point, he's got two kids with Polly that he has abandoned.
Yep.
He's got one kid with Sarah, and a little girl named Alexis.
He also abandoned.
He's still married to her.
He's in the process of it.
Yeah.
And so they met, and so they broke up. And so this is the
Barbara and Hubbard.
Barbara and Hubbard broke up at one point, and this is a transcript of what she said that she's had. I watched an interview with her, and she's fantastic. She's a fucking nut.
Yeah, and this excerpt, by the way, this is her recollection of the conversation that she wrote later in her journal.
You make a habit of instilling engrams too, don't you? That's fine. That's good behavior for the founder of Dianetics. Isn't it exciting for you, being a pawn on such a grand chessboard? You're playing for the world. Can you think of anything more exciting? I don't give a good goddamn about the world. I want a single, gratifying human relationship. You couldn't have one. You're an ambitious woman. You crave power. You're a Marie Antoinette, a Cleopatra, a Lucretia Borgia. You must have a Caesar or an Alexander. No, I don't need a Caesar, though Caesar may need me. I know you now, Ron, and at this moment am closer to you than anyone has ever been. And knowing me, you don't care for me anymore. I care for you in a different, new, and exciting way. I shouldn't do this. He kissed me. You still care for me. How do you know? You can't find your hat. You're distracted. That makes you feel powerful, doesn't it? It makes me aware of something interesting. You still want me. Why? Because you need me. You'd need me more than I need you. In 1939, I was very much in love with a girl. She felt that way, too. When I knew she had a boyfriend coming up, I waited on the stairway with a gun, just for a moment. Then I said, they are flies. I realized who and what I was and left. I told her I would leave her free to marry a Sharpie with a cigar in her mouth from Muncie, Indiana. Would you be left free? The alternative is a Sharpie with a cool cigarette from Elizabeth, New Jersey. That wasn't wise.
Very unwise of you to say that.
I'm just going to say, not my type. That's number one. And number two, that's Meatloaf. Those are Meatloaf lyrics. That is such fucking nerdy.
Shopping with a cigar from Elizabeth, New Jersey.
And I love Meatloaf, but that is opera rock, to say the least.
They're 50s romance comics.
Yes.
You know, that's what all this is. It's very romantic. It's very over the top. You know, kind of shows you how Barbara thought about the relationship.
Well, it validated her to be a part of it as much as it validated Ron to have a beautiful woman as his wife.
Yeah. They're just living two different realities. How don't they see what their lives are like? Because in their minds, they're princesses and kings, but in reality, they're just like pathetic morons.
Kissel.
What?
The reality is what they think. And then it's slowly.
Well, the reality is when I'm looking at them on sweatpants.
Tired of this.
Look at it, though. The reality is me looking at them in sweatpants on a bus, staring at each other, pretending like they're wearing crowns.
If it didn't turn into a gigantic multi-billion-dollar cult that was then I would say you were right and I was wrong. But they made it happen.
They did.
Now, all right, fine.
Now, due to Hubbard's mental...
Yes.
Okay, don't get too fucking
win.
Happy on yourself.
I just said, all right, fine. I didn't say you were correct. I said I don't want to argue about this because we have to get to more information about
Elrond. The Great Debunker strikes again!
You are not the Great Debunker.
Due to Hubbard's mental instability, the Dianetics Foundation became financially insolvent fairly quickly, and the whole thing started to fall apart. Dr. Winter was the first to go, mainly because he found that even though Elrond Hubbard had told him, auditing is perfectly safe. Anybody can be an auditor. Don't worry about it. Winter had seen firsthand at least a couple of people driven, perfectly sane people, driven to an asylum by auditing. They went too deep. They went too far in.
He said people were screaming. No one was sleeping or eating. Like some guy just was habitually slapping himself in the face. Just from talking.
Yeah, from talking. Because they would do it for 2 hours. Auditing was, an auditing session was 2 hours long. And you were supposed to have 10 hours or 10 sessions of auditing before you were supposed to feel the effects. So you've got 20 hours of just going further and further in your mind and being guided into places that are a lot of times not fucking real. I mean, these people sometimes would be guided into these delusions, and they would also be worried constantly about Ingrams. Is that causing me an Ingram? Is this causing me an Ingram? Oh my God, I can't get rid of my old Ingrams because I'm getting new Ingrams all the time, but I can't get rid of my old Ingrams until I take care of these new Ingrams, and it would drive people absolutely fucking insane.
Meanwhile, their bank account is just going lower and lower and lower.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's like me with t-shirts.
I love t-shirts too. I get drunk and buy t-shirts online all the time.
That's all I do.
Yeah. It's a wonderful and by the way, thank you to YYYS for sending us some wonderful t-shirts.
Ooh, thank you so much. Yeah. Also, check out our new t-shirt, represent.com. That's a good little plug.
It's a great shirt.
A great plug. Now, when Winter left, Hubbard went about a campaign to not only tarnish Winter's reputation, but to utterly and completely destroy him, as was to be his philosophy throughout his life when anyone crossed him in any way. He was never satisfied with just someone having a black mark on their reputation. Hubbard wanted that person to be their life to be in ruins.
But you know, it's interesting because, again, going, you know, harkening back to that thing that I saw, the doc, when people do leave the church, they still do hold on to some of the tenets of Scientology.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, they do see themselves as the god that'll take down Scientology. So Elrond was a right to be afraid of people leaving because they did want to blow the whole thing up.
Yeah.
That is what, but that is what cults do. The difference between, in my head, a cult and a religion, we'll probably talk about this a lot, is that it's making little versions of the leader.
Yeah. And also, you know, these people spend so many years thinking that the person at the top is this exalted figure. So if they leave the cult, then that means that they are smarter than this exalted figure.
Yeah.
So therefore, they must also be an extremely smart, godlike person because that part of their brain brain that sees this person as someone better than, they, you know, they then get that transferred to themselves. Hmm. Now, Hubbard's favorite tactic in the early years was to report people as communists to the House Un-American Activities Committee, headed by Wisconsin's own Senator Joe McCarthy.
Well, we're proud of our Joe McCarthy.
You should be.
This was a cheap and easy way for people to get rid of enemies in the early 50s. You'd rat someone out as a commie and see their life quickly fall apart, as just being accused was enough to ruin most people in 1950.
It's kind of like the witch hunt. Someone should have written like a play or something that was about the witch hunt, but was really about that.
Crucible.
Someone I didn't just come up with $1 million idea. Fuck.
I like
that's
the
like
idea.
Every idea you know I come what? Up with their television show sounds like an Always Sunny in fucking Philadelphia.
I like that idea. Can we put Selma Hayek in it?
Yeah.
Sold.
No, but we can put Marilyn Monroe in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, Arthur Miller, that weird man, had sex with Marilyn Monroe. Again, shows that L. Ron Hubbard, all you have to be is interesting.
Yeah.
Or manipulative and in power.
Yeah, yeah. You either got to be...
Exactly.
You either got to be...
That's not interesting.
You either got to be an interesting writer like Arthur Miller or a total jock like Joe DiMaggio, and then you can get Marilyn Monroe. Rather,
yeah,
or
Joe
you can
DiMaggio
be an extremely powerful magician or politician like John F. Kennedy. You get Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, Joe DiMaggio and JFK, acceptable for Marilyn Monroe.
Arthur Miller was a beautiful mind.
No, he wasn't.
Yes, he did.
No, Arthur he had Miller. A beautiful mind. Jesus Christ, have you never read The Crucible?
No, it's a good book, and I actually performed in The Crucible. I was the stake. But this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. Marilyn she didn't deserve that.
Now, Hubbard's marriage was also falling apart once again. Hubbard was having an affair with Barb, while Sarah was having an affair with Barb's former boyfriend, an auditor from Los Angeles named Miles Hollis.
Who L. Ron forced to go on a double date. Him and Sarah went on a double date with Barbara and Miles, and then Miles started fucking Sarah, and that made L. Ron Hubbard really upset.
Okay, so the accurate depiction of these people, L. Ron Hubbard playing scratch us in the corner of the bar. This is a trailer park romance that belongs on the stage of a Jerry Springer set.
Yes.
These people are not classy individuals, but they don't have any answers.
They're gods as well.
I can't imagine someone believing that.
Now, the marriage between Hubbard and Sarah had been absolutely horrific. When Sarah was pregnant, Hubbard kicked her in the stomach several times to try to induce an abortion unsuccessfully. He once hit her so hard that he broke her eardrum. And he had done this exact same thing to Polly as well. I mean, this was just something that he had done throughout the years.
Yeah, would you notice when you read Dianetics, it talks about all of the... It's very interesting because it talks about the engrams created when you beat a woman.
Yeah, and when you say, take that.
Wonderful.
And so the child hears, take that, while in the womb. And so he becomes a thief.
That makes all the sense in the world. We need more male-led religions. That's what I think.
Yes.
But that is the tactic that David Miscavige uses as well now.
Yeah.
Just very physical, very violent.
Extremely so. Now, they both knew that they shouldn't have been together, but Hubbard refused a divorce, saying it would hurt his reputation. He told her that if she really loved him, she would kill herself rather than have him go through the indignity of a divorce.
I mean, he's right.
Like
he's
Romeo
right.
and Juliet, just, but the dumpy-dumb version.
Yeah, just fucking kill yourself. That is insane.
Right.
So Sarah finally left on February 3rd, 1951, which prompted Hubbard to do something extremely drastic. He needed to take control of the situation, so he decided the best way to do that would be an old-fashioned kidnapping. First, Hubbard and a couple of associates took little Alexi, their child. They dropped her off at a second location, then went back 2 hours later to get Sarah. Hubbard then drove Sarah around San Bernardino in the middle of the night, trying to find a doctor to declare her insane.
Literally, he's driving around with a screaming woman in the car.
And like 2 o'clock, 2 a.m.
And then he keeps going into hospitals being like, I need you to declare this woman insane. And they're like, no.
Yeah, you're obviously the crazy one.
And he's grabbing Sarah being like, you love when I masturbate. You don't care that all I do is masturbate. I don't care that all I do is masturbate. I masturbate.
Well, don't forget that you also drink, honey.
I drink as well, but I don't feel guilty about that.
When they couldn't find a doctor to declare her insane, Hubbard said he would return their daughter under the condition that she would sign a document that said she had gone with him willingly and not under duress.
And he will do this several times. And this is a kidnap. This is a thing where he'll be like, because he'll flip it and be like, I'll write a fucking letter up and you have to basically, again, deny reality, yeah. change reality in order to absolve me.
It yeah. happens. It's like the Elford play. That the Westminster's Three had yeah. the three had to sign, where you don't admit that you're innocent. The state still admits that you're guilty, but they let you go free somehow.
Exactly.
It's all nonsense.
Yeah. Elrond naturally went back on this deal and took their daughter to Chicago and took this whole thing even further. He called Sarah and told her that he had killed their child, cut it up into pieces, and dropped the pieces in the river, and it was all her fault because she had left him. And he let that sit for a couple of fucking days.
And then he called back and like, sorry.
Sorry. Nah, just kidding.
Not.
And then he wrote a letter to J. Edgar Hoover at the FBI saying that Sarah and her lover Miles were both communists out to destroy his America-loving organization the inside out.
And Hoover jumped at it.
Oh, yeah, of course Hoover jumped at it because Hoover was jumping at everything.
I just put on my favorite fucking wedding dress. I've got to go take care of more communists. Oh, God
damn it. First of all, let me just, all right, well, let me fish this stiletto out from inside of myself, and then I'll be able to bust these communists.
Hoover, of course, sent out an agent to check out the case, but after just one interview with Hubbard, the agent went back to the FBI and said, this guy's fucking insane. We don't need to have anything to do with this guy. What we do need to do is start a fucking file on him, because this guy we actually have to watch.
And this is very, again, we're going to see a lot where L. Ron Hubbard, using his dumb tactics, brings heat on himself a lot. And then I think it's because he likes it.
Yeah.
The negative attention and the positive attention is what's fueling the fucking manic engine.
Well, you don't have Jesus without Pontius Pilate. You got to have people scrutinizing you, otherwise you're not a god.
Absolutely. He loves people attacking him because the more people attack him, the more valid he is.
He
flips it because if they're attacking him, then he must be doing something right. I don't know if that sounds fucking familiar to anybody, but that's what that's how his followers get more admiration for him. That's how his organization gains strength, because if they're being attacked, then they must be doing something right.
It's cult 101. It's religion 101. The God hates fags cult. That's all. The whole thing was predicated on them being protesting weddings or funerals of Marines, and then the people yelling at them, they'd be like, that's proof.
It's also in nowadays, and that's like, I have friends that are like, I have Instagram friends that are like cyber goths. Like, it's like the super intense like makeup, and they're all like in weird corsets, and then the one boyfriend is always selling this shirt that's like, hated by some, hated by all, trash talk by some, do I give a fuck? I'll tell you what, it's less than one.
The funny irony is no one knows who you are and no one gives a shit what you do.
But people like having haters.
Yeah, people love it. It validates their lives.
That's when, honestly, whenever I feel like, overwhelmed or something, I always just remember there's 6 billion people in this world. All of them care about themselves. No one cares what we do. It's actually a great liberator.
Yeah, some people just want attention no matter what. And it's much more simple and easy to get negative attention than it is to get positive attention. It is ridiculously easy. Now, Sarah officially filed for divorce, and Hubbard got his first spate of truly bad press. This shit was awful because Sarah got a lawyer that loved publicity, knew how to work the press, so there were all these headlines that was like, cult leader kidnaps Tot, and shit like that. And so Hubbard eventually granted Sarah the divorce under the condition that she write a letter saying how awesome he was and how none of this stuff in the press was true, and she would have to publish it. Of course, Hubbard wrote the letter and she signed it, and so the divorce was finalized. Ron then came back to the United States and settled in Wichita, Kansas, under the financial care of a Mr. Don Purcell, Ron's very first super rich dupe, who would give him the money he needed to keep going until he could start Scientology proper, which we'll get into on the next episode.
If you are a billionaire, just please use your money for good.
Wisely. Use
please,
it wisely.
God, don't prop up any...
Be an Elon Musk.
I like Elon Musk.
You don't even have to use it for good. Just use it for your own fun.
Just don't use it for evil.
Bill Gates, too. He does some good stuff.
Just buy a helicopter, zip around with it, and have a bunch of gold clothes.
You want gold clothes?
Sure.
Do you feel like that's not gonna? You're 5'7", slow Polish man. Do you think that wearing gold clothes is going to make you a target?
I would be carried. I would be carried by 5 MMA champions.
Okay, well maybe you're safe.
There's this millionaire in Amarillo that I think is a lot like what you would be like, Henry, if you got rich. He bought this field. He painted a whole bunch of gigantic boulders to look like billiard balls.
Yep.
And then he worked out equations where he would pay people to push the billiard balls across the field to play a huge game of billiards.
That's incredible.
And that's how the pyramids were built.
Yeah, he would pay teenagers to drive around on the outskirts of golf courses and yell at golfers on megaphones.
This is incredible. Yeah, and he went chaos maker. Just literally be a wild card.
Yeah, and he paid, he would pay people money to put up road signs in their front yard that would just have like, some of them would just have like a big cricket, big picture of a cricket on it and say, cricket crossing. And then others would say, why not? And it's just, and there are hundreds of these all across Amarillo because he'd give people like $300. He's like, here's $300. Let me put a sign.
Yes.
And people have no say over what goes on in their yard. They sign a contract.
That's amazing.
Whatever they get, they're fucking stuck with.
I'm going full the jerk if I get rich. Yeah. We're gonna do this.
I can see that. All right. So that's part two, the L. Ron Hubbard series. Unbelievable work. Great job, everybody. Let's see.
Can I stop reading Dianetics now?
You should have never started reading Dianetics.
We're done with Dianetics. We're moving on to Scientology.
I know
proper.
A new book.
We're moving on to the bridge. We're gonna talk about Thetans, Xenu, all of that wacky bullshit. This is when it gets really crazy because the older Ron Hubbard gets, the crazier he gets, the more vicious he gets.
And also, man. Toot toot comes the Sea Org. Sea Org's my favorite shit on the face of the planet. Yeah.
Make way for the Commodore.
It's just Pirates of the Fat Caribbean.
And I don't want to be mean spirited towards people, and I understand how people can, you know, get tricked and duped into this stuff, and they really are victims in their
own
way.
Get out.
Mind. Well, it's people looking for an answer, and that's what every cult is, and these are all like cults of personality. Yeah. People get taken in with this every day. It doesn't make them stupid. It doesn't make them bad people.
No, actually, they're very smart a lot of times.
Yeah, a lot of times they are very smart. But it doesn't make them stupid. It doesn't make them bad people. It just makes them desperate.
Yeah.
You know, looking for an answer. Any answer.
Also,
and some reason, people get keyed in to these cults. They get keyed into these leaders.
Yep.
And they think, all right, this is it. This is the guy that's going to solve all of my problems. And a lot of times, people make it the end-all, be-all. They were like, this guy is going to solve all my problems, or nobody
also,
is.
Also, Scientology is Star Trek University. It's like, it's cool to be a part of the fantasy. If you want to live the fantasy and give in fully, it's like living D&D with your life.
Yeah.
As if you get to go and play with aliens and believe in all of this shit if you want to.
But there's a real world that happens as well. So.
Yes. Yes, there very much is.
All right. Well, let's see here, Marcus. What should we do now? Should we thank people for donating to the Patreon page?
Thank you so much for donating to the Patreon. Yeah. As always, patreon.com/lastpodcastontheleft if you want to give to our Patreon. Unfortunately, we can't do shout outs this week because we're recording so much that we haven't had time to really gather them up. But if you give just $1 to our Patreon, you get advance ticket sales on all of our shows. And thank you guys so much for everybody who has already bought tickets to our next Spade Alive shows. Go to cavecomedyradio.com/live. Of course, in Austin, we sold out the first show just on pre-sales alone. We had to open up a second show. So it is absolutely worth it just to pay $1 a month to get access to the pre-sale tickets.
That's if you want to see us.
That's if you care about seeing us. If you don't care about seeing us, then that's fine.
We're all fucked. Everything's fucked.
Yeah. So give us whatever you feel like we deserve, and if you don't feel like we deserve anything, that's totally fine too. We just appreciate you listening.
That's right. And you can find Marcus Parks on Twitter @MarcusParks. Henry loves you. Henry is Henry loves you on Twitter, and Dr. Fantasty on Instagram. Marcus Parks is Marcus for everything. I'm Ben Kissel on Twitter and BenKissel1 on Instagram
and @LP on the left for all of our bullshit.
Yeah, and go and follow me on Spotify.
There it is. And also, I'm doing a weekly. I'm reading a creepypasta for the Patreon subscribers. So this week's episode or creepypasta was advice from a friend, but is that friend alive? You'll have to listen to find out.
All my dead friends are the smartest.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Because you make them all agree with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they don't have any more personalities, so they can't. Yeah.
Hail Satan.
Hail yourselves, everyone.
Hail Gein.
Mail me Muggles' delations, fucking bitches.
Muggles' delations.